Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, we'll be continuing with our exploration on alternative healing systems. First up, electroimmune systems and human health. We're going to look at how the electrical fields, the energy fields, manifest. What can they do for us? How can you better understand their existence? Then we're going to explore homeopathy, and we're going to look at homeopathy for everything from hemorrhoids to seasonal allergies, and even the initial stages of colds and flu, insect bites, acute panic, anxiety, grief, colic, sprains and bruises, all that. Before we go to those issues, let me bring you up to date on some of the latest in our world on things that we generally don't hear a lot about. With the recent spate of shootings, there's been either a call for legislation that would make it, let's say, more problematic that all children would suffer because they would be, in effect, categorized with an intent just by the mere fact that they are a teenager, they're in school, with draconian laws to commit a crime. Or they are suggesting strict gun control with enormous debates on both sides of the issue. There's another issue that should also be explored, and I want to share something. I'll quote verbatim from Dennis Moore, a psychologist for the Trenton Public Schools in private practice in Newton, Pennsylvania. And I'll share what he has to say. Society is once again shocked when students recently expressed their anger through deadly violence in public and parochial schools in cities across the United States. In response, politicians, schools, and agencies are frantically proposing new laws and programs. Such measures include laws to increase adult liability, introduce metal detectors in schools, initiate anger management programs, train school staff to identify high-risk students in counseling. However, these approaches are like spraying trees with topical insecticides when they have root rot. First, the students responsible for the massacres at Columbine High School and the Santana High Schools in Santee, California, and the shooting at the parochial school in Pennsylvania would not have made any list of high-risk students likely to become violent. Second, when such students did not have access to firearms, they constructed bombs. If all schools had metal detectors, victims could be ambushed as they enter or leave. The common element in these violent attacks is that the predators felt rejected, alienated, or ridiculed by their peers. Society must take a very hard look in the mirror, because that is where the answer is to be found. Stuart Hart, past president of the National Association of School Psychologists, wrote, "The family is a critical support base for stimulating and influencing psychological development in our culture. It is the only structure generally capable of meeting the fundamental psychological needs for safety and belonging and being valued by others early in life." What we have seen over the years in our society is fewer and fewer children having such intense, dependable interactions with their parents early in life. The desire of adults to live a more affluent lifestyle resulted in many businesses being open 7 days a week. In the 1950s and 60s, there were very few businesses that were open 7 days a week, and the one day that America did not work was a day that families had time to spend together. It not only provided children with the opportunity for interaction with their parents through the day, but also for forging relationships with grandparents, aunts, and uncles. Americans work more hours per week than people in most countries, including France, Korea, Great Britain, and even Japan. Religious groups have also contributed to the erosion of a family day by holding religious services more than one day a week in response to children's sporting events now being scheduled on traditional days of religious services, and the needs of working parents. Since there is no day of the week that is used to be scheduled 6 days a week are now held 7 days a week as well. Parents and their children are often apart as some members of the family go to one event and the rest of the family goes to one or more other events. Or parents choose to drop off their children and pick them up later. Therefore, families are further denied the opportunity to unwind, recharge their batteries, and develop close relationships that support one another. The primary focus of adults has shifted from guiding and caring for the next generation to self-fulfillment and living a luxurious lifestyle. This has led to increasing numbers of parents placing their children in substitute child care from as early as 4 to 6 weeks of age and for as long as 10 to 12 hours a day. How can children develop feelings of belonging and being valued in life by parents who rarely see or interact with them? A director of an excellent child care center in the suburbs of a major metropolitan city has described her own feelings of sadness when observing children who cry when their parents come to pick them up because they would rather stay at the center. Caretakers also feel a pervasive sense of sadness for children whose parents drop them off at the child care center even when they're not working or when they're on vacation. Some parents even resent being asked to pick up their children when they are sick. Such parents ask, "Where will I put them?" as if the children were luggage. Is it any wonder that these children come to view themselves as excess baggage in the lives of their parents? It has been found that children who are placed in substitute child care more than 15 hours per week when they were 18 to 24 months of age show significantly more resistance, aggressiveness, and inadequate control of their anger in preschool than those placed in substitute child care less than 15 hours a week. Is it the normal sequence of child development for the peer group to become increasingly more important than the family for feelings of belonging and social acceptance during adolescence? However, when children have not had intense and dependable relationships with parents early in life, being accepted as belonging to a peer review group becomes overwhelmingly important. In a child care setting in which there is frequent turnover of a child care providers, many children are even deprived of having dependable and intense interactions with a paid stranger. As a result, the only human beings that tend to be dependable sources of interpersonal reactions are other children. Consequently, in those early years, children need to get a feeling of belonging, being valued and accepted from other children instead of from their parents and family. What kind of feeling and self-worth does a child develop when he realizes, if only at an unconscious level, that his parents value a new car, a swimming pool, a more expensive house, going to a luxury vacation, or a status of a job, more than spending time with him? During my recent evaluation of a troubled 14-year-old, he said, "Parents should learn from their kids are more important than their job." Consequently, children and adolescents have no motivation to listen to adults who give advice or guidance when they have never had adults giving them feelings of belonging and being valued early in life. This would explain why drug education programs, sex education programs designed to prevent teenage pregnancy, and smoking prevention programs have not worked. Despite the United States being the most advanced country in the world, our children who used to lead the world in academic excellence and achievement now demonstrate knowledge of math, science, and literary skill that is far below that of many countries. Dr. Sylvia Rim, author of The Underachievement Syndrome, has referred to the number of children not surpassing, not equaling, not even coming close to the educational levels of their parents as a national epidemic. When children feel accepted and valued by their parents, they want to emulate them, please them, and try to meet their expectations. Children who have not received from their parents the emotional gratification that was important to them early in life have little motivation to get the grades or exhibit the behaviors that are now important to their parents. Is it any wonder that it is devastating when such children reach adolescence and experience rejection by their peers? Children have always had to deal with not being in the in-group, being teased or made the object of jokes upon occasion. But years ago, children's sense of belonging and being valued in the family acted as a buffer, which enabled them to weather the storm of temporary slights and rejections by a peer group or clique. Today, many children do not have that emotional anchor to keep them from drifting over the edge. The emotional development of our children has been abandoned by our society. Daycare and divorce have stolen from children time for emotional interaction with their parents and replaced it with television distortions or withdrawal into cyberspace. Encourage selfishness, as reflected in the New York Times bestseller, Looking Out for Number One, has left young people without adult support and guidance for developing a personal philosophy of life based on unchanging moral and ethical standards. The level and intensity of anger felt by today's youth is readily apparent in the music and rap tunes that dominate the youth culture and in their performance or preferences for movies, television programs, and video games containing increasing levels of violence. This spreading infection of anger has resulted in a frightening increase in our youth directing violence toward others. The rate of suicide has also shown a similar escalation because we are seeing two sides of the same coin. In the last 18 months, seven of eight youths who committed suicide of mass violence were described as depressed, with 4 to 8 having expressed suicidal intent. The feelings of isolations and alienations from parents and peers are loading the guns of both groups. Some might say all that is needed is intensive counseling or psychotherapy at an individual or family level to repair the young person's fractured sense of self-worth and cool the boiling cauldron of anger. However, developmental psychology has found that there are critical periods for the development of certain characteristics and abilities, and if the opportunities for their development did not occur during that critical period, they may never appear. Research has also found that mothers did not develop an emotional bond with their parents through dependable and intense interactions early in childhood were unable to develop close emotional relationships with their own children, even after a year of individual psychotherapy. My own research has found that the more time children went in substitute child care between 6 and 30 months of age, the more resistance, aggressiveness, and poor anger control they displayed as a preschooler. However, during the 30 to 36 month age span, the amount of substitute child care the children experienced had no further effect on their level of behavioral problems, as it appears that the damage had already been done. It would benefit society if all businesses were to be closed one day a week to allow families the opportunity to experience regular and intense interactions with family members. Society needs to reestablish the importance and value of parenting. The government should be providing a parent stipend to parents who care for their own children from birth to 3 years of age. Opportunities for a three-day work week during the child's first 3 years of life would enable parents to have both a career and alternate caring for their children. This would benefit the children, the parents, the employers, and society. The roots of violence directed towards others, as in school shootings, or towards oneself, as in suicide, are the same. Either result is a tragedy. Americans can do anything if they have the will. Is caring for our children more difficult than sending a man to the moon? Is it any less important? End of quote. I would add something to that. And by the way, I commend Dennis Moore for that very informative article. I would suggest that when parents have not spent adequate or quality time listening to a child, seeing what the child needs, seeing how the child is viewing the world they're growing up in, and when the parent becomes dissatisfied with what the child may then do as a reaction to the parent, the first thing that parents do today is put their children on psychoactive drugs. 6 million, minimally, each day are put on a psychoactive drug, primarily tranquilizers, either Ritalin or Prozac, or a combination of the two, as if, well, if you're not going to behave in a way that your teacher or I believe is adequate or appropriate, then for being disobedient or being aggressive or being angry or being irritable, here's your punishment. And now, what wasn't done right to begin with is only compounded. My parents, and most of your parents, grew up at a different time, different values. The baby boomers had best stopped for a moment in all the clutter and hecticness of a given day and try to reprioritize their life. It's so important to know when to say no to the opportunities that we feel we must always take advantage of, because we sacrifice something, quality time in our relationships, with ourselves and with our children. And my parents, whether I wanted them to or not, were there at every night and always on Sundays and generally on Saturdays. There was always time. There was always uncles and aunts on the weekend. They all came together. There's always someone that you could speak to about anything. Today, can we say the same? Let's go to our first guest. My first guest is David Francis. David Francis, graduate of Oxford University, has been researching natural human healing for over 25 years. Nice to have you with us today, Francis.
Hello, Gary. Good to speak to you.
Some researchers consider the human energy field to be the first level of the immune system. Now, you refer to this as the electroimmune system. David, please explain how the average person can see or feel the human energy field, and also what environmental influences have a negative effect upon that human energy field, and what environmental influences have a good effect.
Right, I'll give that a go, Gary. The first feature with the human energy field is that it can be felt with the hands. So, for example, by learning how to sensitize the hands. And to do this, one way of doing that is simply to practice taking the fingers and just gradually, with each of the fingers, bouncing them gently on the thumb and producing a height of state and sensitivity in the nerve endings in the fingers. Another good way is to work with tennis balls and just work with the hands and try and produce a state of heightened sensitivity. There are other more in-depth techniques, but they're harder to explain over the radio. And then, as with feeling a physical surface, is to approach, for example, the energy field of a person, just very gently, and to feel for a change in the electrical pressure that you feel. Now, again, it's quite hard to explain on the radio because it's quite intangible, but with training, and I train people how to do this, it takes about half an hour to pick up the way of it, and then you can incorporate it into your life. Another way is to use the eyes to see the energy field, and for that it's a matter of learning to look with a different part of the eye. I describe it as the radar in the eyes. And for that you look not at the person that you're speaking to, but you actually look right the way through, particularly just around the area just above the head. You look right the way through that, all the way through the wall, through the planet. You look forever. And it's a look you find often in Egyptian artwork. And it's my belief that in Egypt, they have great understanding of these worlds. And so, for example, in their colors that they show in their artwork, they demonstrate different states of the human energy field. In respect of the environmental influences, which have a negative or positive effect, this ranges to every aspect of life. I think a very good example from what you were just saying is the kind of environment in which there is a lessening of value and a lessening of care. And for example, that figure that you gave of 6 million children a day on Ritalin or on Prozac, then there's something at play in the environment which is not sustaining in the way that it used to. And so in a warm and caring home ecology, then there is a kind of electrical energy that's present in which a person feels valued. And this is looking at what is emanating from the caregivers inside that ecology. Because if two parents really have a great deal of love for the child who they're raising, then that fills the house. And it's a homely example, but there's no cooking like home cooking. And I'd say the reason for that, it's not to do with the ingredients, it's to do with the love and the care and the energy that is actually going into the food as it's being prepared.
Okay.
Also, with regard to a negative effect, I believe, well, from the evidence that I've seen, all kinds of electromagnetic machinery do have an influence on the energy field, on the human electroimmune system. And so, for example, no one knows at this point in world history what the actual effect of long-term use of cell phones, for example, is actually going to be, holding an electromagnetic transmitter right close into the ear. It's known that the energy penetrates at least 2 inches inside the head. And no one actually knows what this is going to cause in this current generation of users of these devices, say in 20 years' time. In many ways, the human race is conducting an unparalleled experiment upon itself in so many different dynamics. And I think that's something to really take into account and research and consider what it is you want to have close in to your life. And what you want to surround yourself with.
David,
yes.
I appreciate that answer. Thank you. What do you tell people about cleaning the energy in their home, and what is being cleaned, and how does it work?
Right. Well, to clean the energy in the home, every place on planet Earth has energy which is coming up from the ground. And particularly inside an enclosed space, I mean, out in nature, the energies run free along what are called ley lines, or in China, dragon paths. And there's a regular cleansing of the natural planetary energies, which is taking place every dawn and every dusk. Now, when living inside a house or an apartment, that regular cleansing is not able to take place in the same way. It's rather like the difference between water traveling through a stream and water trapped in a puddle. There's a great deal of difference between the two ecologies. So we have a kind of an energy field, almost like a fluid vortex of energy inside the place where we live, where we work. And when it's enclosed, it can quickly become polluted. And there are ways to regularly clean that energy. I mean, this was the science of Feng Shui in the East. In different parts of the world, there are many different ways that have been used. But two very simple ways that I demonstrate to people, one of which is the use of sound, so that after physically cleaning the house, which is the first and most important thing, that there's regular water and air coming through the place to cleanse it, that then it's possible to use bells, both Western-style and Tibetan bells, to produce a vibration, which is a cleansing vibration. And that's a very good cleaner of energy. And the second is to use incense. And there are certain kinds of incense, particularly that which is used currently in the Catholic Church, in which they have a particular incense which is called basilica. And they've used that for hundreds of years to electrically clean the area around the altar before communion. And they do that very, very deliberately. I mean, it's known as holy smoke. That's one of its names. And it works. It's an electrical cleanser. So you can use that through your house and then open the windows and the smoke goes out and it cleans the energy field.
Or is you're using a form of feng shui?
Effectively. That's correct.
How often do you have to do this?
Sorry, Gary?
How often?
It depends upon the state of affairs in the house, but once a week is a good is a good ongoing amount to do it. I recommend once a week. But if, for example, there's been an argument or friction, it's a very good idea to clean the energy in the house, because otherwise the next day you'll be influenced by the fact of the argument that happened there the day before.
All right. Explain the connection between the energy field and a person's health and the belief that most disease begins with a breakdown of electroimmune system.
Yes. When the energy field weakens, then it's a sign of the fact that the robustness, the natural robustness of the system, is beginning to weaken and is debilitating. So each of the organs, for example, produces its own energy field. Everything that lives produces an energy field around it. And it's symptomatic of the state of health of that life form, the state of its energy field. So there's a definite correlation between the energy field and a person's health. And this can be detected by sensing the energy field, because it can be found when feeling that energy field that there are, for example, hot spots or particular places where the energy becomes gluey or sticky, and other places where there's a nice natural flow. And one way I think of this is that nature's systems have a natural ease about them. And when there starts to be any kind of breakdown, then that ease is no longer there. The energy starts to get clumpy and to coagulate.
How do we explain that what we take through our eyes, such as a movie with violent content, or the food we eat, even the supplements we take, all affects our energy field? Explain that.
Well, there's I start with an ancient saying from, I think it was Marcus Aurelius. He said, "You become what you think about." And I really believe that to be true. And according to what you think about, also what you feel, how you use your emotions, this produces patterns and frequencies in the aura or energy field. So, for example, if someone collects violence, a violent frequency, through their eyes, then they build that frequency and they build a kind of radio set for that frequency in their brain. And they then start to collect that frequency in their aura. Now, if they do that consistently over weeks and months and even years, inevitably that will erupt. It becomes impossible for the person to prevent the outbreak of violence that then erupts from their system. And this is where it's so crucial. I mean, there was the example that you spoke of earlier about this, really this epidemic of violence which is taking place in schools. And to me, it's the cause of that, in addition to the parenting issue, which you spoke of, is the frequencies that are being allowed to permeate the younger generation now. So violence in, and ultimately violence out. And I think that issue is clouded, and the movie makers and all their PR machine make out that it needs endless psychological studies to discover if this really is the case. But it's really common sense, and of course is the case. So that's at sort of one end of the bar. At the other end, of course, if a person is able to train themselves into increasing content such as patience and care and appreciation and inspiration, then this is reflected in an increase in the brightness and the power of the energy field. So we really do, through the course of our lives, paint our own portrait inside our aura or energy field.
How does a person avoid, if it's possible, the contact with certain detrimental frequencies, And how can a person live well and avoid them at the same time?
Yeah, that's a really penetrating question at this time, Gary. Well, I would say to that that at this point in world history, really it's almost impossible to avoid certain detrimental frequencies. So, for example, if a person's going to be living in a city and working to pay the bills and maintain themselves, then they're really going to be meeting frequencies which are not of their choosing. Every advertising hoarding that one drives by, I mean, the airwaves now are full of advertisements coming at you all the time. So what I advise is to be careful as to where you place yourself. Think of yourself as a million-dollar necklace and be careful not to leave yourself lying around. And to build robustness inside the aura and the energy field, and to do that by actually building positive contents. So, for example, it is possible to concentrate one's life, to build a positive energy field. And then not only does that help in one's own life, but then to be able to be a giver more than a receiver, and to help transmit that sense of value and belief to others. So practically, there, for example, it's possible to build certain colors in the energy field, and actually by taking the time to consider the state of one's electrical well-being, just that small fact already makes a difference. Because if a person can take even a couple of minutes out from their day to pay attention to the field that's around them, then that makes a huge difference.
I appreciate that. Thank you. There are many stories about places on the planet with natural healing powers, such as Lourdes, Fenhorn in Scotland.
Yes.
Places within the desert where the Hopi had their adobes.
Yes.
Or the different natural springs around the planet. What evidence do we have that these places have real healing powers?
Well, I think the first evidence is what's happened to the people that have gone there over hundreds of years, in certain instances thousands of years, such as Lourdes. So there's the first evidence, and that people keep going back to these places. I mean, they're by instinct and tradition, they know that these places are effective. So I'd say that's the first most obvious evidence. Beyond that, in my own research, I'm certain that different parts of the planet carry different, I call them electrical frequencies, different forces that actually come out of the ground. And there are certain places, often known as sacred places, where there's a particular concentrate of power. And these have become known as healing places, special religious places as well. Stonehenge is one example in Wiltshire. The fact of the in the Islamic, the way of Islam, you know, people going to the Kaaba, going to a particular place on the planet, and no other place will actually do. They need to go to that particular spot because their belief is that there is something special. The whole idea of pilgrimage in the Christian tradition is saying that there's something special in a particular place which is worth going to that place for. And I think there's a great deal of evidence about that.
Well, I don't know about the hard evidence. I certainly know that having gone to these places myself,
yes.
Lourdes and so many of the, and Fenhorn, and all over the Americas and places in other parts of the world, including Stonehenge,
yes,
I can feel it.
Exactly.
I mean, if you're sensitive and you simply still the mind, you can feel the energy.
Yes.
And if you're distracted, if you, you know, don't want to feel something, you won't feel it. You can,
yes,
desensitize yourself to these very subtle energies.
Yes.
It's all very subtle.
Yes.
Talking about something subtle.
Yes.
There are many studies that speak about the effect of supportive thoughts, such as prayers, or sending healing thoughts through just looking at a photograph of someone and sending thoughts, that they have healing.
Yes.
Give us some background about this and why it works, and also, what about the idea that people who believe in a particular religion are healthier than those who don't believe in anything such as that, and what evidence do we have to substantiate this?
Yes. Well, if I can take the first part first, and the idea of sending healing thoughts. It's clear that every person on Earth has a power within them, and the actual magnitude of that power when considering it is huge. I sometimes think that, for example, the weight, what it takes to carry the weight of a human being. You may weigh the same amount as, say, a small kitchen appliance. And what it would take to carry that around for even an hour, and just how tiring that would be. But the power of our soul within us carries that around all day, allows it to jump, run, catch buses, whistle, talk. There's a huge power inside each one of us. Now, our head has the ability to tune that power towards any particular end that we target. And it really is our own responsibility what we target that power towards. One potential is to tune that power into healing and to transmit a healing energy to another person. And so absolutely it works. A photograph gives a definite target, really. And each one of us, each one of the 6,000 million of us on Earth, is absolutely unique. And that photograph acts as a target to then transmit that healing energy. So it works, and the more one can build that healing force inside oneself, then the more effective one can be. And I think this comes back to what you were saying about visiting Stonehenge and other sacred places, where it's a matter of being sensitive to what's there. It's actually to reduce the interference in one's life. It's no good trying to send these healing thoughts whilst being full of worry about a hydro bill or something, because what's transmitted is not of a healing nature. So to really empty one's mind of other thoughts and to concentrate upon well-being and an uplifting frequency that can help. And I think this is the bridge then into the second part of the question, about the idea that people who believe in a particular religion are healthier than those who don't, or it appears that's the case. And what I believe in that is that when a person has a property of faith and belief, it's natural to the human. Like a young child naturally trusts in the faculties which he or she has been gifted with. And there's a tremendous natural faith and belief that belongs with being born a human on planet Earth. One tremendous example of this is the trust that each of us feel before we go to sleep, because we don't actually live in a hostile universe, despite what movies like Men in Black and things make out. We live in a very friendly universe in which the sun is our father and the earth is our mother, and the whole universe supports the fact of our life. So it's natural to have faith and belief in that which gives us life. And each one of us, before we go to sleep at night, we trust in the fact that we're going to wake up in the morning. And it's tremendous trust, because we're going into unconsciousness. But we know that something will restore us back to ourselves. So I feel that it's those properties of faith and belief, not so much the aspect of which particular religion, but it's the actual sheer faith and belief itself, which produces a very powerful state.
Just the faith and belief, just the faith and belief in your own higher being.
Yes.
Okay.
And the purpose, that there is a purpose for human life.
Oh, there sure is.
And that there is a God, and there is a working creation, and we have an important part to play inside it.
Well, David Francis, I appreciate you being on and sharing some insights, just to give us a mirror for a moment, that there is a parallel universe, an energy universe that we're all connected to, And then once we understand that, we can actually begin our journey of healing.
Yes.
And if people would like more information, you have a web page, davidfrancis@passport.ca.
That's correct. And there's an information line if anyone wants it, which is 212-340-4731.
Thank you very much. Nice to have you on, David.
I've really enjoyed speaking with you, Gary.
Take care.
All the very best.
Bye.
Bye now.
That's David Francis, and let's go over now and speak with our other guest who is standing by, and he is going to talk about homeopathy today, and he is Dr. Edward Schaltz, S-H-A-L-T-S. He's board certified in psychiatry and neurology, and he's founding diplomat of the American Board of Holistic Medicine. He's been treating patients with homeopathy for 15 years and currently in private practice and complementary psychiatry at Beth Israel's Continuum Center for Health and Healing in New York City. Nice to have you with us today, Dr. Schaltz.
Hi, nice to be with you today.
There are both single and combination homeopathic remedies that people can use for injury and trauma. What are the homeopathic remedies that you would suggest for some of the more common conditions like sprains and sunstroke and hemorrhoids, seasonal allergies, the initial stages of colds or flu, insect bites, stings, even anxiety or grief?
Yes, there are many different remedies that people can use. I would like just to make a small point and to tell our listeners today that homeopathy is a very complex science and also an art of application of the science. Still, in very acute conditions, one may want to try one or two remedies, and they might work very fast. Usually in acute conditions, you can see an initial effect in really 5 to 15 minutes. In that case, you might want to continue your treatment, or if it didn't work, then you might want to seek an attention of a qualified homeopath. In cases of blunt trauma, for example, which is very common in this coming summer season, one of the best remedies to use is a single remedy. It's called Arnica. It's an herbal remedy. It's spelled A-R, N as in Nancy, I, C as in cat, A. And I suggest that people buy Arnica 200C. It's a homeopathic dilution, which means that this remedy is very, very diluted. One can buy all the homeopathic remedies that I'm going to mention in many, many pharmacies in New York City, and maybe it makes sense for me to mention a few of them. What do you think?
That's all right.
Yeah. I don't represent any one of them, so I'll just mention a few, and then you are welcome to use any one you wish. One of the major suppliers in the city is Bigelow Chemists. Their phone number is 473-7324. They are located on the Lower East Side on 6th Avenue between 9th and 8th Street. The other big supplier is Hickey Chemists. They have two locations, one in Midtown on 2nd Avenue, and the other one is Uptown on 3rd Avenue. The phone number is 223-6333. Then there is Wilner's Chemists, 682-2817. So if somebody has a serious blunt trauma, for example, somebody fell or even was in a car accident, it makes sense to take Arnica 200C, one or three pills under your tongue. They come in multi-dose tubes and very easy to dispense. You'll be able to figure it out. It's also a very good remedy if you want to prevent an excessive bleeding and pain after surgery. As you probably know, a lot of, especially plastic surgeons, started using this remedy, but they commonly make one mistake. They offer their patients to take this remedy before surgery. And it's not a good idea because it's not going to work as prophylaxis and actually can harm people if taken before. So my suggestion to take one pill of Arnica 200C immediately after surgery and then to take probably another pill at night and another pill on the following day. Usually you would be able to see a very quick effect from this remedy. If a person had a very deep trauma and just must have a cold application on this place and wouldn't let go of it, and there is a tremendous swelling, and you took Arnica and it didn't work, then the next remedy to try would be a remedy which is called Lidum. It's spelled L as in Lenny, E, D as in David, U, M as in Mary. And I would suggest you take it at a concentration of 30 C, 30 C. Letter C stands for esentamol dilution. It's the way homeopaths mark their remedies. If somebody had an acute sprain or strain, I would also suggest to take arnica 200 C, one or two pills, and then you might want to buy an ointment of arnica and an ointment of another homeopathic remedy, which is called Hamamelis. It's spelled H-A-M as in Mary, A-M as in Mary, E-L as in Lenny, I-S as in Sam. Combine them together 50-50, or if you cannot get Hamamelis, then I would just use arnica and put it on your sprain or strain. Needless to say that you might want also to apply some coal to the place that's been strained and take some rest. A special case is when somebody's finger gets caught in a door. It happens, unfortunately, quite often, especially with children, and then the remedy is different. It's also an herbal remedy. It's called Hypericum, H-Y-P as in Peter, E-R-I-C-U-M as in Mary, and you might want to use a concentration which is called 30C. Again, all these remedies are very easy to buy in this pharmacy that I just named. For a sunstroke, one of the first, I mean, the first thing that people have to do is to put a victim under shade and put something cold on their head, even if it's just a cold bottle with water. And then you might want to use a remedy which is called Belladonna, B-E-L-L-A-D-O-N-N-A, also in a concentration of 30C. I would like to point out that a sunstroke is a very serious condition, and if a person is not better quite soon, you might want to call 911. You asked me about hemorrhoids. Actually, we are very fortunate because in New York we have a combination product from a French-based company, which is called Boiron. In French, it's called Boiron. You can buy it in any of the stores that I just named, and it's called hemorrhoids suppositories. Again, hemorrhoids suppositories. They are very easy to use, and in my experience with my patients, they are quite effective. For seasonal allergies, which is what's happening basically right now, there is another combination remedy which is made by the same company. It's called Sabadil. It's spelled S as in Sam, A, B as in boy, A, D as in David, I, L as in Lenny. And it comes in pills, and there is an instruction on the box. It's very easy to use. Please remember that for acute situations, for temporary relief, these combination remedies are going to be very good, but if you want to address this condition in a long-term way, you might want to see an expert homeopath. I don't think that colds and flus are going to be such a big issue during this coming season, but just in case, I have to tell you that basically in the beginning of a cold or any condition when there is just the beginning of it, and there is a tremendous fever, there are two basic remedies that you might want to have at home, especially if you have children. One of them is called Belladonna. I just spoke about it in relation to sunstroke. Very characteristic symptoms are that a child or an adult have bright redness on their face, and they're kind of delirious, kind of confused, and they have this very characteristic look in their eyes. They're kind of bedazed. Usually the head of a child is hot, and hands and or their feet are very cold. I would give them Belladonna 30C, just one pill, and wait for 15 to 20 minutes to see whether there is any effect. Usually if a medication is working, you'll be able to see almost an immediate response, and the child usually goes to sleep. And if she or he wakes up again, then you might want to give them one pill. Needless to say that if that didn't work, you might want to call a doctor. The other remedy that is also quite helpful is called Aconitum. It's A-C-O, N as in Nancy, I, T as in Tom, U, M as in Mary. It's very different from Belladonna. Children and adults who need this remedy are usually very agitated. They have this scared look on their face. They're very anxious and restless. Sometimes even it looks like they're in terror. And they are usually hot all over, and they have burning thirst, meaning that they need to drink a lot of cold liquids. In any situation which presents with this kind of symptoms, I would suggest to give them one pill of aconitum 30C, and if by chance you give them two or three, it's okay too, and wait for a few minutes and see what's going to happen. In my opinion, it doesn't make sense to repeat them very often, because in homeopathy, usually in a very acute situation, things happen very quickly, and if a remedy works, it works almost right away. What I expect to happen this season is quite a bit of insect bites and stings, and for that you might want to remember two remedies. One of them I already spoke about is called Lidum. I'll spell it again. It's L as in llama, E, D as in Diane, U, M as in Mary, and you want to buy it in strength 30C. Very characteristic symptoms are going to be tremendous swelling, and a person would want to keep a cold application all the time. You cannot take it away. It's very, very good for bee stings and wasp stings. Another very helpful remedy for the same problem is called Apis. I would buy it in the same concentration, 30C, and the symptoms are almost the same, and they're also better from cold, but not to such an extent. As a default situation, I would suggest that the person first tries Apis, and if that didn't work, and I'm talking about one pill of 30C, if you didn't see an improvement in 30 minutes or less, then you might want to try Lidum. For acute panic and anxiety, if they are connected with a severe stressor, or you are just on the airplane and somebody starts going into a panic state, a remedy that I just mentioned, remember aconitum, which has kind of this presentation, I would suggest to use aconitum, A-C-O-N-I-T-U-M, at the concentration of 30C, or if you can get it, at the concentration of 200C. If a person is anxious just before exams or they have a stage fright, as they begin to develop symptoms, there is actually a very helpful herbal homeopathic remedy. It's called Gelsemium. It's spelled G-E-L-S as in Sam, I-U-M, and I would buy it in a concentration of 30C, and that I would suggest to take one pill as you're getting anxious, and then if you find it helpful, in 15 to 30 minutes, you are welcome to take one or two more doses. Usually, the effect is almost immediate, and it's very, very helpful. Unfortunately, and it's such a nice sunny day, it's kind of strange to talk about it, but a lot of people experience grief at different moments of their lives. There are many remedies for that in homeopathy, but one that comes to my mind almost immediately is called Ignatia. It's spelled I-G, N as in Nancy, A, T as in Tom, I-A. I would suggest to buy it at a concentration of 200C, and if you are experiencing a severe loss, or you are going through a difficult divorce, or unfortunately somebody died in your family and you can't get over it, I would suggest to take it once at a concentration of 200C. The results are quite dramatic, and if this is the remedy you need, you might feel better in the course of 30 minutes to an hour. That's basically probably all about the conditions you asked me.
Well, that's very good, and I appreciate you sharing those with our audience. And if people would like more information, do you have a web page or a contact number?
Yes, they can call me at 646, it's an area code, a new area code for Manhattan, 935-2223. And if I'm not in my office, they are welcome to try 646-935-2220. I also have a web page. It's www.homeopathynewyork.com. New York is spelled out N-E-W-Y-O-R-K.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Dr. Edward Schultz, S-H-A-L-T-S, and his web again is www.homeopathynewyork.com. A lot of good information there. And I want to say that today's program is 2753. Now, we're going to just end a little earlier from the interview segment, a few program announcements. A week from today, next Monday, the 21st, at noon, my show, I'm going to try to broadcast live. I have to speak with the station But we're going to try to broadcast our demonstration at 120 Broadway in Manhattan at the Attorney General Spicer's headquarters to offer a constructive protest with positive solutions to challenging the existing draconian laws on electroconvulsive therapy for all people, not just the particular victim in this case who galvanized this interest, who is Paul Henry Thomas, being shocked against his rights and will. But we're going to do what we can to try to create some political changes on this, some new legislation, and we're working very hard behind the scenes to do that. So I hope that those of you who can come to this demonstration do so next Monday, noon, 120 Broadway in Manhattan, and we'll try to broadcast live. I have quite a roster of people there who are going to join me. Separately, it was 10 years ago that I opened up a holistic clinic, not because it was profitable. I made no money from it. I did it purely as a public service. There was a holistic physician. Within a year and a half, I grew that space, went to 72nd Street in Broadway. Many of you remember that. And then 2 years ago, when the lease came up, because I was the landlord but had no income flow from it and couldn't sustain this humongous jump in the rent, I had to close that, had to give it up because I just couldn't afford it. Well, I've probably had 100,000 people ask me, what can we do now? We've got cancer, AIDS, hepatitis, herpes, heart disease, blood pressure, overweight. You know, what do we do? The good news now is that there's a new place. Let me give you the number, 212-252-1942. 212-252-1942 in Manhattan on the east side, and it's got everything. All the lifestyle, natural healings, holistic metabolic therapies, ophthalmology, chiropractic, dermatology, chelation, biooxidative therapies, everything. And it's very conscientious. People you've never heard of before. All new people. Again, for all of you who need that help, but like someplace that's really holistic, 212-252-1942. And I don't own this place, but I certainly was invited in to help interview hundreds of people and select the ones I felt would really serve the public interest. So now there are, and they will be. They've already asked for all my protocols. So you all have a very nice day. I'll look forward to seeing you back here tomorrow. Got a great lineup of programs all this week for you. Have a nice day, everyone.